All right, so we're going to do this recap of last week's talk on relationships. Such an important part of being human is how we relate to each other, you know, both the intimate, you know, more committed relationships, but also the relationships of just strangers. You know, we want to be able to cover the whole gamut as we approach this topic. Because relationships bring us some of our most painful times and also some of our most joyous times. And so trying to find, you know, how can both areas be a place of practice, place of growth and understanding. And so tonight we want to talk, we're going to focus more on the sorrow, the difficulty part of relationships. And next week we'll explore more the sense of interconnection. And particularly focusing on this topic or this sense of what creates the other, you know, that's something separate than you, something who's someone who's outside of you. Right. Of course, we look, we see, you know, some of them we know very well, we still see them as an, something outside of us. But Dharma teaches us to start to see through that. So there's less and less, in some ways you could say distinction, but there's much more connection, much more of a sense of oneness that starts to emerge as we go through that process. So relationships, I struggled a little bit with how to frame this topic because, you know, the relationship between a long-term partner, between a sibling, a parent, a child, a coworker, a boss, employee, there's all these different nuances. Someone who you delivers your mail or who, you know, gives you your medicine, whoever it might be, there's all these different nuances of relationship. And I wanted to kind of simplify it all by simply focusing on this sense of otherness. One way you could say it is how we project on other people, you know, how we place our past history, our past ideas on this other person instead of seeing who they actually are in this moment. And as someone said on the Tuesday morning meditation, realize that this whole topic also relates to how we relate to ourselves, that we can create the sense of other within ourselves. So you can also hold that too. It's like, how do I create that quality of division, of separation as I relate to myself and others? And certainly, you know, the details of how we relate to a loved one, a spouse, a sibling, a dear friend, a stranger, there's all these different nuances that do matter and how we create that other. But if we step back and just hold the big picture of it, I think it helps us provide this North Star that allows us to start to navigate through all these nuances of the relationship. So you can use those details which come up. You know, I relate to my wife differently than I might relate to my daughter. But in a very generic way, a very deep way, there's that sense of separation that arises. And so we're going to hone in on that. So you can use that as a North Star orienting factor, even though you're seeing all the details that arise, which we do need to navigate and understand. So to get a sense of this, I did this experiment last time on noticing the other, but first noticing what's the absence of other. So I invite those in the room and those online to pick some kind of inanimate object that you can see easily. Something that, not another person, not an animal, but something that's just very benign. So I'll pick this bell here. So as you look at the object, notice what your mind, the label it puts on it. Okay, that's a bell, it's this shape, it's this color. There's all the preferences, all the things that come up around that. Now see if you can take all that natural labeling and putting on and relax that a little bit. Almost let it kind of be suspended in your attention to actually looking in a deeper way. So you're starting to look through our assumptions, through our ideas, our concepts, to the actual experience of this thing. This is starting to let the nama-rupa fade, all the urgency to do something with, how I use this object, how I relate to it, and just try to drop all that so there's just the object being observed very simply, very directly. And then letting the sense of you who is observing also start to fade, to drop into the backdrop, the background. Almost relaxing that positionality of you observing something. That simply there's observing happening. This needs a little bit of safety, a sense of trust, a sense of release. Okay, I can not be so defended in this moment. I can let my heart open to this experience. As you do this, letting this sense of space between you and this other object start to also fade. Sometimes as you do this, as you relax, it feels like this object is just suddenly rushing forward as this space falls away. The sense of you and the object starts to, that distinction starts to soften. There's a type of merging that happens, a lack of separation. And as you get a sense of this, just hang out there for a few moments. See if you can relax with that. Relax into that experience. And one thing you might notice is the absence of movement, that there's a simply abiding, simply resting with this experience. The normal urge to think, to do something with quiets. There's a sense of stillness that starts to arise from that. Doing nothing with, but connecting with the essence of this object, essence that's beyond any names or forms, and also the essence of you, who's simply observing, simply relating. Now, still gazing at this inanimate object, bring back its name, bring back the label to the forefront. As you do this, you notice all the memories, all the thoughts, the impulses to do something with also arise with that name, with that labeling. Notice how that relationship suddenly changed. Instead of being this quality of intimacy and closeness, there's a sense of separation, a sense of distance. So this is creating that sense of other. You know, of course, there's the reality of it, that there is something outside of you. But there's also the reality that our perception is what kind of makes it much more solid, that sense of separation. And as practitioners, we start to be able to go back and forth between these two. We can go into that quality of oneness, of non-separation, and also pick up the separation comes back when it's needed. Actually comes back when it's really a helpful way of distinguishing. That's a wrench versus a hammer. That's a pen versus a pencil. And so the separation, it serves us. That's one of the, you know, those of you who are parents know that children go through that place of really starting to distinguish everything's one, and they start to realize, oh, that's a cat, that's a dog. And it's really important for them to label and distinguish that. It's a part of being human. And yet it also creates that sense of isolation and ultimately that sense of suffering when it's believed in unconditionally. So we just did that exercise with something that is inanimate. And, you know, perhaps you got a sense of that closeness and separation. Now imagine doing that with another person and how many more layers come up across that in the sense of who they are, how you've related to them in the past, how you hope to relate to them in the future. And of course, it's not always that clean, just you and that person. You sometimes put your mom on that person, or your dad on that person, or your sibling. So there's much more layer of complexity and also impulse to move and act. This is when the Buddha talked about creating the whole world from this frame, this body, this physical body. This is what he meant. That this is what we just talked about last year, the creation of name and form, of nama rupa, of creating the suffering. And especially the more clinging, the more stuck we are with that. So what I mean by clinging is that stuckness around that, that grippiness, that Velcro quality to that experience, the more suffering we'll have. The more we're able to let that sense of separation come up when it's needed, but also release it when it's not needed. When that becomes the true understanding, then our lives start to unfold in a different way. We can pick up that sense of separation when it's helpful, when it's needed, and then drop that role when it's not. Of course, interpersonal conflict amplifies this quality of separation. As I shared last time, I had two weeks ago now, just a little conflict with my wife around something silly like a household chore. You know, who's doing enough? Who's, you know, it's my turn or your turn to do the dishes, that kind of a thing. And just the way she said something, it kind of triggered this whole quality of separation of really, you know, it's hurt feelings came up. But that creates that quality of separation. And I found that I would, you know, wanted to kind of just stay in that sense of separation, kind of let that churn and not really fester, but going that direction. And as long as I kept that quality of separation, I was able to maintain that. But once we had that conversation and came back together, then I could no longer maintain that. I was able to release and reconnect. And so this is one of the secrets of relationship and Dharma work, using it as a spiritual practice, is how we project on other people to start to see that and then start to release that. So we do that, you know, in a very interpersonal way. We do that with whole categories of people who we see as other, maybe by the color of their skin, their religious beliefs, their gender, their body size. There's a myriad ways that we create separation. But it's all maintained and created through the mind, through the belief and thought, which is good news and bad news. The bad news is it's very pervasive. The good news is we can actually see through that. We can actually release that and connect with, just like we did with that inanimate object, the essence of that person. But to do this, again, it's easily said, but it has a level of momentum behind it. I use this example of waking up in the middle of the night with a vivid dream that feels very alive. And sometimes I have these, for various reasons, I do a household projects. I wake up and I think like the house is like falling down, the walls about to collapse or the ceiling. And sometimes I get up and yell and say, watch out, you know, that kind of stuff. And it's interesting, I wake up and I start to act from that. And then eventually I kind of touch the walls and say, well, this doesn't match what my dream world is. The real world is not matching that dream. And as soon as I start to recalibrate, I'm able to release that dream and come back. Okay, this is where I am right now. And we have, that's hard sometimes in relationship, is to release that dream, to release that projection. Because it feels so real. It feels so true, you know, and it's in a relationship, it's only maybe half true. The other person has their own experience, their own story that they're living. You know, learning how to drop that dream, waking up. Because relationships also really reveal some of our deepest wounding or some of our deepest hurt. In some ways, that's perhaps the purpose that we seek other people to be in relationship with, on some level, is to try to work those out. I remember, I think it was Hendrix said, in terms of romantic relationships, that, you know, we fall in love and get married, and then 6 months later, we wake up and realize we've married the worst characteristics of both our parents combined, and they're laying next to us, you know, and it's like, oh, boy. And there's some truth to that, you know, especially some of our early relationships, or if we don't start to heal that, we tend to repeat those patterns. You know, so being patient and starting to learn, okay, this relationship, and again, this can be both an intimate, long-term relationship. It could be a sibling. It could be a stranger. I mean, people can trigger us. If they hit the right spot, it doesn't matter how well you know them. And the trick is to learn how to change that, turn on its head, so it's not a struggle, but actually an opportunity to grow and learn, to actually see how we create that sense of separation, how we create that sense of otherness. So relationships, of course, have, there are differences. You know, some relationships have the commitment to work things out, to talk things through. Other relationships, there's different reasons why we would have to be more working it on our own side. Maybe it's someone we don't know very well. It's someone that we've maybe been hurt by. We want to have that sense of safety and separation. So you have to use that discernment. It's not like you can go talk to the complete stranger who just cut you off and say, let me share how I feel. You know, it might be better to work with that on your own space. And then finally, just to kind of finish this little summary up, I shared Gottman's researches around couples. So just here actually at the U, they put people in these little laboratories. It was actually houses that looked just like little apartments, and they had cameras, of course, with their permission. And they could very quickly determine if that was going to be a successful relationship or is going to end by how they relate to each other. And there was four particular patterns that they noticed. And so I just present these as a way to kind of notice how those come up for us, as to bring a little bit more inquiry and interest into those patterns. And these apply both to long-term relationships, but also to strangers, to people we don't know very well. We also have these patterns come up. And as someone said on the Tuesday morning meditation, he realized that that also applies to ourselves. So these four, he called these the four horsemen of the apocalypse, the end of the world. So it's criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. So, you know, criticism, of course, is that judgment, that never quite right, and that just that repetitive pattern. So whenever you notice that coming up, it's a beautiful opportunity to train yourself to pause. Before you see that critical thought or that express that or share that, just pause and see what's present. Start to see how you're creating a sense of story, a sense of world in relationship to that. Perhaps the arrogance that only you know how the best way to do something is. Contempt, that sense of someone is less than you, is not as good as you, and that looking down. You can start to see how all these really magnify that quality of separation, magnify that quality of isolation. Creates that sense of suffering, that sense of other, of two-ness. Defensiveness, that sense of guardedness, of protection. Now, how does that arise? Start to become more sensitive to that. And then stonewalling, that sense of disconnecting, of abandoning, of, okay, I'm not going to talk to you. I'm just going to shut you out. Maybe some of these strategies resonate in your own experience. So these are hopefully these little very clear research-based relationship patterns, destructive, painful patterns. They can actually be an invitation to learn to listen more deeply to our own experience and also to the other person. Sometimes that internal listening is what's first needed, so we really know what's present, what's here. And then from there, we speak from that, we act from that, and we listen to the other person with as much care, as much sensitivity as we do ourselves. All right, just sit quietly for a few moments, letting those words settle. All right, so I'd like to invite us to do some small group discussions around that. So I think groups of probably four to five is a good number. And we'll also have breakout rooms for those online. We'll do this for 20 minutes. And remembering these groups are a chance to share your own experience, to see how you're kind of articulate how you're relating to these topics. It's so helpful to be able to put that into words and to be heard by another person. And it's not about trying to solve someone's problem. It's not about trying to fix them or even offer helpful suggestions. Instead, just listen, just practice listening and practice speaking from the heart and keeping everything that's said in those groups in confidence. So the topic is around these four horsemen of criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. So start to, you know, speak about how, maybe which are your typical favorites? How do they show up? You know, being as honest as you'd like and sharing how you create the sense of story, the sense of other in relationship to it. So we're using that lens of how we create separation and other, and these are just ways of highlighting that. And I was saying how these are maintained by our unwillingness to release our story, to release our ideas of that person. And see what you've learned about that in your walks through life. All right, does that make sense? Yeah? On line two? All right. Could you put them into some small groups? Okay, welcome back. I hope that was a lively and engaged conversation with each other. And it's nice to see people here physically, be able to actually physically be together. It's probably been a long time for that, almost half a year and a half. So let's take a little time to see if there's any questions or sharing that you'd like to offer. And I can dialogue with you in both online and in person. So let me start with the in-person people, and then we'll kind of go back and forth. So anyone in the room like to share anything? And those online, you won't be able to hear the person. I'll paraphrase and let you know what they said. Yes. So let me see if I paraphrase it for those online here. See if I captured the essence of what you're saying. So the comment was around noticing a pattern of wanting to care for others and people please and make sure everyone's feeling okay. And noticing if you start to back off on that, how there's a fear that comes up from that you know, things won't work out the way if you're managing it, you have a better way of staying in control of it. And that there's that edge of trusting things to kind of, they'll work out, but also a lot of fear that they won't. And then, you know, how does that practice come in with that? So this is a nice example of when we look at something like how we relate to someone, and that's a very common pattern of wanting everybody to be, you know, happy and, you know, comfortable, don't want anybody to be mad at you. And, you know, I think many of us can relate to that pattern. And that's all highlighted through relationship. You know, relationship shows it to us if we start to attend to it. So that's, I'm trying to bring it into the gateway of the Dharma. So, and then you also see the fear of not engaging that pattern. And you mentioned like not being in control and, you know, things won't be managed if you're not in there. These are all essential Dharma questions that we will all encounter in our own way, our own form, you know, because that's what a lot of these patterns that we show up have those basic, you know, things in common that we're trying to control, trying to manage the world. Sometimes it's very functional and it really helps us succeed. And sometimes it's dysfunctional and is often mixed up, depending if we're in charge of everybody or if we're not in charge. And, you know, there's all those patterns that come up. So as those come up, so I'll speak from my own experience around that. So you start to learn to, you know, first of all, seeing is the fundamental first step, you know, to see that whole impulse to act, to move from that place and see if you can just pause, even just for a few moments. And feel how the impulse still, it's like their impulse arises and you want to jump in there and do something with. Okay, see if you can feel what that is like as a body experience. Notice the deeper beliefs around it, as you mentioned some of those. If I'm not in there, things are going to fall apart or people won't like me. And then practice saying, okay, is that really true? You know, am I really that wise or that powerful or that, you know, there's that, if we step back, we often kind of have this idea that we're omniscient and we know exactly what everybody else needs to make them happy. And if you talk to them, they often say, no, you don't actually idea. So that's part of that feedback from relationship. Okay, so they say, okay, how can I relate to the person in a different way? So you feel that pattern come up, there's an impulse to go down the normal pathway and say, okay, what's a different one? And often it will have that kind of marker or trail marker of fear, because it's an unknown. It's outside your normal repertoire. That going outside your normal repertoire from a dharmic standpoint is going outside the normal house that we've created, the sense of self, the sense of identification, the sense of who we are and how we order the whole world. Learning to see through that often means being willing to go through some of those fearful, unknown places. And the other side of it, though, you start to realize, oh, that pattern serves me sometimes, but other times it keeps me really in a certain fixed relationship of control. When you start to really relax into it, then there's a different quality of peace that arises from that. And paradoxically, a deeper relationship that arises, deeper intimacy, and actually a better way to actually navigate those relationships. Because you say, okay, this is what I want to do, but do you really want to be fixed or managed right now? You know, maybe you just want to be listened to. So it's a nice example how those kind of, you know, very ingrained patterns actually become a gateway into the Dharma. So thank you for sharing that. Yes, Deb. Yes, yeah, thank you for sharing that. So just to paraphrase it for the online folk, make sure I captured that well. So the sense of criticism and how it often has a strong root of being righteous, like you know better than the other person. You're, you know, it may be based in a lot of knowledge, a lot of experience that they don't have. And starting to, you know, see how stuck that can be, but also starting to realize that there's an impersonal nature to it, that sometimes the person is just has a different way of being in the world. It may be because of, you know, as you said, some physical ailment or some disability, or maybe just a different worldview. You know, maybe they don't have a white skin. Maybe they have a different culture that they grow up in, and how we project what's the right way of doing things upon them. And so starting to take it back into the impersonal, it allows that to start to loosen up. Does that kind of capture what you said, Deb? Yeah, that's a nice gateway into seeing the impersonalness. Now, sometimes it's a big leap from that investment, I am right, to that release of that perspective. So some things, you know, I don't, you couldn't hear this online, but those in the room could hear as Deb presented that there's, you know, a little bit of laughter around that pattern, because we all recognize that, of course, you know better than the other person, you're right. And that sense of humor, I was already starting to take it less personally. So sometimes when you find a pattern that just feels so entrenched, actually kind of amp it up, you know, to yourself, not to the other person, but to yourself. Get to the point where it seems ridiculous. You know, like those of you who are Harry Potter fans, and the Bogart who would change into your most feared thing. It could psychically, telepathically read what you're most afraid of and present that. And the way that these young wizards and witches learn is to actually make it more ridiculous, to actually make it larger than it, you know, so the point where you start to laugh at it. And that can be a fun way to work with it. So consider, because when you see the pattern, oh, I'm so critical, I need to fix that. You've just kind of added another level of criticalness to that critic. And we can just get more and more critical of the critic and just gets tighter and tighter. But just take it and say, okay, let's make it more pronounced. Let's make it to the point where it's ridiculous. And that way, too, you start to smile at yourself. You start to laugh at that. That shifts it from being so personal. And then that's not taking it personally. You start to see, oh, you might have that perspective then to see, well, this is just what I'm assuming is the right way of doing things. You know, and it's not maybe related to this. I mean, relationships show this all the time if you're actually listening to each other. I mean, like here's a silly example for my wife and myself, mowing the grass. Okay, so in her family, her mom always mowed the grass. In my family, my dad always mowed the grass. So here we are arguing about who should mow the grass. And she's smart enough to say, okay, you can do it. I'll give that one up. But it's like we do this all the time. We project how things should be. And if we can start to hold it more lightly, our lives become lighter. Our relationships become lighter. It's not that we don't take things seriously that need to be taken seriously, but we actually can relate and connect in a much deeper way. This is something that, you know, Rodney used to, when I was first learning to teach, he would say that when you're talking to someone who's really suffering, who's maybe experienced a death or a loss, something they can sense if you're kind of trembling with, you're kind of, he didn't say this, but you're kind of freaking out inside, or are you really able to hold that and meet that experience? Right. So we start to learn how to really meet that experience by not taking it personally. And then, you know, like with the how do we manage it, suddenly we're not tied to our kind of habitual or even neurotic ways of relating. We're tied to actually dancing with that person, how they're arising in this moment. And we're very sensitive and connected to that feedback. And it's the same thing internally, the same way we relate to ourselves, actually. The internal and external start to really blend and merge. Because how our internal relationship of self-criticism is mirrored outward, vice versa. But yeah, I thank you for sharing that, Deb, that sense of not taking it personally. All right, how about online? Anyone have anything like to share now? Yes, David, go ahead.
I'm trying to get to a point where I can like get this kind of tight. But I think basically what I'm trying to get at is an experience that I had recently where there's two things that happened. One had to do with just kind of a over the course of a couple hours having felt really excited and open-hearted to start engaging with somebody. And then something occurred that was sort of triggering. And then, but it was not really as bad. Like the circumstance didn't really warrant my inner reaction. You know, like it was amplified from, I don't even know what it could have. There was maybe a little subconscious. I didn't actually know that there was an issue. It got super kicked up. And then I really was kind of angry and just kind of had daggers out of my eyes towards the person for, you know, after that. And then I also found myself in the midst of that, kind of battling with myself, my self-concept of like, that it's not like, I was trying to like hold that down because it wasn't living up to who I thought I was, you know, and then it impeded my ability, like it impeded dealing with it, you know, because I had to look at it, you know, in a way that it was just unflattering. So I just found that to be interesting. I feel like it relates to a little bit of what we're talking about here. So just wanted to share.
Yes. Thank you, David. Yeah, that's I appreciate the vulnerability around that. So a couple of things that come to mind, if I heard you right, one was the piece that you start to see that pattern, you know, so like making daggers with your eyes. And then there's a judgment around that, like, okay, that's not who I am. And so that suddenly we're judging that pattern coming up. And this is something that I think we can all relate to is that, you know, we have this idea of how we should be in the world, you know, since the values we have, and we fall short of that. You know, we fall down on that. And then we add that judgment to it. And this is one of the fundamental things that we're just trying to teach in meditation instructions is how do we learn to meet the moment just how it is without adding anything to it? Okay, so that's the instructions. And of course, by practicing those, you get to see how many times you do add something to the moment's experience. So the moment is feeling that sense of anger, that sense of over the top. Where did that come from? You know, irritation or anger toward that person. And then there's that, how you're relating to it. And that was of internal judgment. So then a whole thing, kind of a painful experience got more painful because you weren't allowing yourself to have that. Right. So that's, you know, going back again to those instructions, just the breath, breathe itself. let the sound be heard and to fade. Right? And that's practice for these kind of painful things. And so as those come up in the moment, okay, here's all this. Okay, I really don't like this part. I don't like this lustful thought. I don't like this rage. I don't like this judgment. That's where the rub is, that not liking, not allowing. It doesn't mean we're going to act from it. But you say, okay, where's that sticking spot? Okay, I don't want myself to be that kind of a person. Okay, let me sit with that. So what I'm trying to point to is see where that initial rub is. You know, okay, this is not who I am as a person. This is not my belief of who I am as a person. And not allowing that. Okay, let me sit with that belief, you know, that sense of stickiness. And then it starts to soften and you can come back to feeling the rage or anger directly in itself. The other piece, if I heard you right, you said there was kind of a quality of closeness and connection that preceded this. And it almost seemed like this was over the top. Like, where did this come from? Where things are going so well, and then suddenly, boom. This is a pattern I remember my wife and I struggled with, because we have this idea we should always, like, should we just be like close 100% of the time? But really, you know, it's like, just inhale, don't ever exhale. You know, it's like there's this closeness and there's this distance. It's a natural dance. And, you know, it was so painful for a while before we figured it out, because I would want to, you know, have some distance and she would want to be close and vice versa. And, you know, we all know that we try to be close when someone wants space. No one feels good about that. You know, so learning to say, okay, they just need some space. And this is actually mirrored in the practice itself as we meditate. Sometimes there's a deep level of stillness. And then, you know, the next moment or the next sit or the next day, if we're on a retreat, we find a lot of hindrances arising. So it seems to be like we kind of go back and forth. And more we can, going back to Deb's comment, start to not take it so personally. It's like, oh, I'm just kind of I need a little bit of space here. And perhaps that's part of that, the deeper anger was just not allowing that need for some space. And the more we can kind of catch that early on and say, oh, this has been going great. I'm going to just take a little walk by myself. Instead of saying, okay, let's spend another 2 hours in this intimate interaction. And we're already kind of at capacity. So we're learning how to gauge that. And, you know, when we're with someone else, to learn to give them that space. So there's that grace of that dance of closeness and separation. So we can go back and forth. Does that help, David?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. That is helpful.
Yeah. You're welcome. Okay, so let's see if there's anything else here in the room. Yes, Katie. Sure. So the comment is around just, you know, getting back to in-person interactions and finding that there's a tendency to kind of be judgmental in groups and how it's easy to kind of get caught up in that. But at the same time, realizing that it feels, you know, toxic or feels like it doesn't feel very good to participate, but yet still participating. And you know, how do you balance that? Is that, yeah. You know, I think sometimes, you know, criticizing, being judgmental is a great way to feel part of the group, right? It's like, you know, I talked about the sense of other, self and other, connect one and other. Is like we gang together and we create the other outside there, and we can judge them and, you know, criticize them, and we feel connected in the midst of that judgment. So sometimes just noticing that, you know, that may be a piece there that kind of highlights, like, oh, I want to feel connected to these people. I want to feel like a part of that group, and kind of bringing that forth, because that maybe is overriding, you know, the wisdom of your heart. Like, oh, this is ultimately not very nice or helpful or kind. So you acknowledge that need, and then see, okay, how do I steer this? How do I, you know, participate, but maybe direct it a little bit differently? You know, you say, like, so there's kind of that creativity that the more we're identified, the less options we have. The more we're able to kind of observe and experience it. Again, with David's question, okay, I don't like this, but I also feel the judgment. You know, seeing the whole landscape, we're able to actually be much more, have much more options, much more flexibility in how we interact. And it's a tough one. It's like that's, I remember Joseph Goldstein made a commitment or a vow to not speak about someone who wasn't present. And he realized, God, there's not much to say. So it's, I think the best thing is to turn internal, say, okay, what does it feel like to have that, not to disown anything that's in there, but at the same time, just because it's there doesn't mean we have to act on it. And then see if you can, use that wisdom to start to, be an active participant in the group, maybe direct things a different way. It's like, yeah, that sounds really hard. Like you're judging someone's whatever, their choice of, let's say, being vaccinated or not vaccinated. Okay. That might be a common one coming up. You can reframe it like, wow, we all have those choices, and it's there's things I do that I'm sure other people judge or something like that, to kind of turn the lens back on the people themselves. I don't know if that's very helpful, but it's what comes up around that. So finding, to help the group shape into a different way of being connected. Yeah. You're welcome. And this, I think it's really nice to have this in person and online. And then hopefully our goal is to have it be so both groups feel very much engaged and participatory. So continue to give us feedback about that. And that's a great one, Sean, about the hearing the voices, and we'll work that as soon as we have the technology or the capacity to it.